The Baseball Today podcast is presented by Travelocity. Travelocity's new top secret hotels makes Travelocity.com the best place for hotel deals.
This is Baseball Today.
First and foremost, I'm a baseball player.
This was a funny game. It was a round ball that comes in a square box.
And then I ended up getting up and talking. I started to really get going, and I had to kind of cut myself off.
I know the fans are great. You know, this is where I wanted to be from day one.
Play ball!
Baseball Today.
Hi there. Welcome to the Baseball Today. It's Thursday, April 15th, 2010. Tax Day! Hope you got your taxes in. I'm Eric Carabel, joined behind the glass, as always, by Jay Soderberg. And let's get right to our special guest, ESPN The Magazine's Tim Kukjian. Tim, thanks for joining us on the Baseball Today.
My pleasure.
Baseball's awesome, isn't it? I'm just so happy that they're playing and they're hitting, and I'm going to be at the Citizens Bank today. It's going to be a beautiful sunny day, giving out the rings for the Phillies, and I'm just so excited. I know you're excited. I know you love baseball, too. Anything struck you in the first 10 days of the season as just really awesome, and that's why you love the game?
Well, like a million things have, Eric, as always. This guy Nelson Cruz has 6 home runs already. He hit a ball in Texas a few days ago. There was no chance that could have gone more than 250 feet and went 420 feet into the bullpen in right center field. And then you look at Vernon Wells, the comeback year that he's had at least so far. A guy who couldn't hit the ball out of the ballpark last year has already got 5 home runs. There are a million great things that are going on so far this year, and I just love it when we get almost 2 weeks in, and then you start to develop a rhythm to the season. You start seeing a few things that you start trending, and it's great. I love early season baseball like this.
I do, too, especially when the weather's nice. Now, in today's Baseball Tonight Clubhouse that you can find everybody on ESPN's baseball page, you write about the Rangers, and you talk about, obviously, they've got some offensive weapons, but their pitching staff, one doesn't normally think of the Texas Rangers, you know, past Nolan Ryan, of having good pitching, but they've got some good guys at the back end of the rotation. Certainly, this Neftali Feliz looks terrific. What do you make of the Rangers pitching right now?
Well, they made a huge step forward last year with their pitching. Mike Maddux came in and basically challenged all the pitchers to challenge the hitters. Let's throw some more strikes here, boys. And, of course, this is what Nolan Ryan has been preaching since the day he became the club president, is we're going to be more responsible as starting pitchers. We're going deeper into the games, and we're going to challenge guys, and we're going to do our best here. And their ERA dropped by almost a run from 1 year to the next, which is a huge jump. And if you look at the people they sent to the minor leagues, including Derek Holland, they sent 3 guys down or on the DL who were major league starting pitchers last year. And that just doesn't happen with the Rangers these days. Now, we'll see if they can last a whole season with that pitching. You know, people get tired awfully easy down there. But with the way they swing the bats, I think they're going to pitch well enough to be in the race the entire year. And I think that's a 3-team race in that division, very winnable, and I think the Rangers are right in the middle of it.
Who's the team that's not in the race in the AL West?
Well, I think long-term, I don't think it's going to be Oakland, although at this point, the way they've pitched so far, you never know. And in this division, you certainly never know, because Seattle just, I don't see, is going to score enough runs to run away, certainly, in the division. The Angels have started to show a sign of weakness, really, for the first time in a long time. I still think they'll win. Texas is good, and Oakland's played better than almost anyone so far. It's really, really interesting how that division has gone so far.
And if you look at the team pitching leaders, Oakland Athletics, 2.69 ERA, best in baseball. Texas Rangers, 2.95, that's fourth. Seattle's 12th, and the Angels are 27th in team ERA, not off to a very good start. But obviously pitching is critical there. I had our buddy Mark Simon on yesterday's Baseball Today podcast, and he mentioned you. We were talking, I think the question was about how could a player have a higher batting average than an on-base percentage, and Mark definitely, you know, described how that could be. And then he said that you are infatuated with sacrifice flies. And I'd like to hear a little bit about that. He said, I won't tell you anymore. Tim will tell you tomorrow. So tell us why you love sacrifice flies so much.
Well, I made a big mistake a couple of years ago on Baseball Tonight where I uttered the mortal words, I'm fascinated by sacrifice flies, to which Oral Hershiser, Eduardo Perez, and Steve Berthune just made total fun of me on national TV for doing that, and I deserved every bit of it. The point is, though, you can get a sacrifice fly and still reach base. You can get a sacrifice fly in several different ways, and I don't think people understand anything about them. Meaning, the first year that they were kept, Gil Hodges set the record, obviously, first year for sacrifice flies. It's in the mid-50s, and it was 19 in one season. And that record still holds today. So he said it the first year they kept track of him, and it's still a record today. Eddie Murray has the most sacrifice flies of all time, and yet he never led the league in sacrifice flies in any season. So I looked up all this ridiculous stuff about sacrifice flies. I don't think people really understand how many ways you can get one, all these interesting things, which I found interesting, and they're still laughing at me on Baseball Tonight.
Well, I'm not laughing. I'm very interested in this because I don't know how many times back when my teams couldn't score any runs, I would see first and third and one out, and all a guy needs to do is hit a fly ball to right field to get a speedy runner in, and he can't do it. I think it's underrated. I mean, basically, the idea here is get the run in, no matter how you do it, even if you hit a lazy fly ball to right.
Right, and Adam Dunn, during his career, I'm going to be close on this, I believe it was 1,078 plate appearances without a sacrifice fly. He had 63 opportunities with a runner on third and less than two outs, and he not once hit a fly ball to score the runner. That's amazing to me. And the reason this came up, Eric, I'm telling you, way more than you want to know.
No, I want to know. I want to know.
Is that to Carlos Lee of the Astros a few years ago had 13 sacrifice flies at the All-Star break. So I start looking this stuff up thinking he's going to break the all-time record set by Gil Hodges in one season. And then, of course, as luck would have it, he had zero sacrifice flies the second half of the season. So that's where the I'm fascinated by sacrifice flies came from. My next book will be titled that. And hopefully people someday will pick that up and say, what is this all about?
Well, I'll buy it, because, and I'm not just saying that, I'm interested in this kind of stuff, and maybe Carlos Lee just hit too many home runs in the second half of that season, you know, it could have been that. Obviously, you know a lot about baseball history, and today is a day that people remember in baseball history. In 1947, Jackie Robinson made his debut for Brooklyn, and I was wondering if you could give our listeners a little bit of, just talk a little bit about Jackie Robinson, his impact on the game, and what this day kind of means. I'm assuming, I mean, the Phillies would be, I think both teams today are going to be wearing number 42. Are all teams wearing number 42 today?
That's usually how it works, and that's the way it should work, because you can obviously make a case that Jackie Robinson was the most important player in Major League history. Obviously, everything changed after Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier and black players were basically allowed to play. I think it took until 1960 until every team had an African-American player, which shows it took a while. But what that guy went through was unbelievable. I remember talking to Rex Barney, who was his teammate briefly with the Dodgers, and he said, some of the things we heard at those games, you wouldn't say that to an animal. And they said it to Jackie Robinson, and he was still able to put it aside, even though it angered him to no end, and he was able to play. And as you know, Eric, he didn't just play. He was a great player. He could beat you in so many different ways. He could hit a home run and steal home in the same game. He played multiple positions. And what people forget about him is what a great athlete he was. He was a great tennis player. He was a swimmer. He was a great football player at UCLA. He was a basketball player, and he was a Hall of Fame baseball player. The perfect guy to basically change the way baseball worked and basically the way the country worked, too, because a few other businesses said, hey, look what's happening here in baseball, and they started working it that way also.
63 years ago today, Jackie Robinson, first game as a Brooklyn Dodger. We have an email here, and this is Brian in Utica, New York, and he's writing about the article you wrote about pitchers the other day. He says, I was reading Tim Kirkjian's article on ESPN about the new wave of pitchers such as Lindstrom, Greinke, Felix, and I was struck by Jim Palmer's quote that we will never know how good these pitchers are because we're never going to see them get a batter out the fourth or fifth time through a lineup. And he says the criteria for a Hall of Fame pitcher needs to be evaluated. And he goes on to talk more about this and about how Sabathia last week gave a hit in the eighth inning and automatically gets pulled from the game, and that would never happen. I was wondering if there's anything that you did not get to put in that article that would maybe further explain this, because I read the article, and it's true. I mean, all the Hall of Fame pitchers are pretty much retired or, you know, should be retired at this point. I don't know, how do you define a Hall of Fame pitcher after this?
Well, I think we have to change the criteria, at least in our minds. I mean, Jim Palmer is absolutely right. The thought that, you know, people just don't complete games anymore. I mean, Eric, last year, the Dodgers led the league in pitching. They won the division. and they had one complete game the whole season. If that doesn't tell you where we are in baseball today, and moving forward, I mean, we're going to have to take a seriously different look at how we evaluate Hall of Fame pitchers from here on out, because this class here with Santana, eight complete games in his, we're going to have to look at them in a different way, and I don't know how we're going to do it, because it's possible these guys are going to come up for the Hall of Fame in 10 or 15 years, and we're going to Bert Blyleven, and we're going to look at it and say, no, wait a second, something is wrong here. Bert Blyleven had 60 shutouts. He had as many shutouts as Maddux and Glavine combined, and he's still not in the Hall of Fame. Now, he'll get in next year, but if he's not in, we're going to have to look. Guys just aren't going to have anything close to what he's got with those numbers.
I mean, I guess 250 wins might be a different kind of standard, right?
Well, I'm sure it's going to be, because we're not going to see a 300-game winner anytime soon. I mean, CeCe Sabathia has the best shot at it, but he's going to have to stay really healthy for the next 10 years. We've seen a lot of pitchers have a hard time doing that.
This is something I've been debating with people the last couple of days, and I talked with Mark about it yesterday. Albert Pujols, we all know he's awesome. He's putting up amazing numbers, and he might even put up his best season this year. But I would argue that no matter what Pujols does the rest of his career, the best player of all time will still be Babe Ruth. Pujols could end up second, passing Ted Williams and Willie Mays and others, including defensive value. Will anyone ever pass Babe Ruth for you as the best player of all time?
I just can't see it happening, Eric. As you know, he was the best left-handed pitcher in the American League, and then he decided, I want to be a hitter now, and he became the greatest hitter of all time. There is no way around that. First guy ever to 30, 40, 50, 60 home runs in a season. When he got to 700, no one else was even halfway there. And when he hit number 138, he became the all-time home run hitter, meaning the final 586, whatever it is, only added to his total. Plus, he still has more career shutouts than Pedro Martinez. Think about that for a second.
That's unbelievable. One other thing here that's unbelievable, the Houston Astros, it's a tough start for them, and I don't particularly enjoy watching them lose every game and not score any runs, but I was wondering what your take is on the start to their season. Can things get better? Can they get worse?
Well, I'm not sure they can get worse than this. They've scored 14 runs in eight games. The Diamondbacks scored 13 runs in one inning. The Astros have two home runs the whole season, fewer than Alex Gonzalez. They have eight walks the whole season. A scout told me the other day their entire infield, the scout said, is utility guys, and they're all playing every day for the Astros. Now, it's going to get better when Lance Berkman comes back, but how much better is it going to get? And I know the Astros' hands are tied, meaning they can't go out and make a series of trades here to try to make things better. I think if they're hopelessly out of it in June, I mean, they're going to have to look at trading Carlos Lee, which will be difficult given how much money he makes, and they may have to look into trading Roy Oswalt also. He makes a lot of money and has had some injury issues, but teams would love to have him. The Astros don't want to trade him, but they might have to trade him if they're going to try to get back on track in some form.
That would be a shame, because it's a good franchise. It's in a big city. They should have money. But obviously, the bad farm system, I think, contributed this as well. I mean, for years we've been talking about this as the worst farm system in baseball. You got to have a good farm system, and most of the top teams, you know, Yankees and Red Sox, Phillies, they have good farm systems. That helps, and
yeah,
they just have nothing coming up.
It's really a shame, Eric. And keep in mind, I covered the Orioles every day in 1988. I saw all 21 losses to start that season, and I can tell you, when you get to 0-8. And people start panicking in that room, it's a really depressing place to be. And again, the Orioles had 13 more losses to go from here, but I can tell you that is not a fun place to be when you're looking at your record and you haven't won yet, and we're almost 11 days into the season.
Well, here's the hope, and the Astros can get a victory today or soon and end this streak, because it doesn't seem fair. All right, Tim Kirkjian, ESPN The Magazine. You see him on Baseball Tonight. Check out his work. Thank you for joining me on the Baseball Today.
My pleasure, Eric. Thanks.
All right, so Tim Kirkjian always does a great job there, and he's the perfect guy to have on the anniversary of Jackie Robinson officially breaking the color barrier in 1947. Before we get to other stuff here, birthdays, and I know some of you have been complaining about it, but Milton Bradley, happy birthday to you. I ripped you in a column and on television yesterday, but, you know, I don't know you. I mean, maybe you're misunderstood. But his birthday's today, as well as Aaron Laffey, John Danks, Chris Tillman, Baltimore Orioles minor league pitcher, Jeremy Burnitz, remember when he came up with the Mets and then, you know, blossomed as a Brewer? I remember him back in the 80s. Was it the 80s or the 90s? Probably the 90s. It was the 90s, I guess. Ted Sizemore, Philly's second baseman in 1977. Woody Freiman, who I think served up the home run Mike Schmidt hit to win the 1980 division in Montreal. I think that was Woody Freiman who served it up. Why a lefty was pitching to Schmidt in the 10th inning, I can't answer. Eddie Mayo, happy birthday to you, although I don't think you're with us anymore. That's about it. And today's name of the day, Cy Sutcliffe, Hub Collins, Cinders O'Brien. Cinders was his first name, C-I-N-D-E-R-S, Cinders O'Brien. They don't make names like that anymore, or Dutch Distel. Big name for birthdays. A big birthday, a big day for strange. Anyway, around the diamond time.
News from around the league.
Let's go around the diamond.
David Ortiz is not slated to play on Thursday. And, you know, that's probably a good thing. And it sounds like he thinks it's a good thing, Ortiz. Mike Lowe will be the designated hitter. You know, whether it's a lefty or a righty starting for Minnesota, and it happens to be one of the toughest lefties, it's Francisco Liriano today, I would argue that, you know, every once in a while, a player just needs a break. And David Ortiz, I don't have the numbers exactly in front of me, but he's really not playing well. And it didn't look to me as if it was just because it was against lefty pitchers. I mean, he's basically just struggling to find himself, and, you know, he needs a day off. No big deal. We all need a day off, don't we? Phillies officially put Jimmy Rollins on the disabled list. They expect him to miss 2 to 4 weeks. Shane Victorino was moved out to the leadoff spot, and he knocked in 5 runs and hit a home run. Phillies double up Washington 14-7. Both teams make their extra points. Blue Jays switched their closer to Kevin Gregg. I don't know why Cito Gaston for the last 2 weeks was telling everybody Jason Frazier was his closer, and then all of a sudden he just changes it. Frazier did blow a couple saves, but, you know, it's a week into the season, and a veteran manager like Gaston, you would think, you know, would not overrate and underrate numbers. Kevin Gregg off to a better start. But just a little bit odd to me. A bad day for closers otherwise, though. Well, other bad day for Jason Frazier, too. But Brian Fuentes on the disabled list for the Angels. Fernando Rodney will be the new closer. Mike Gonzalez of the Orioles was off to a terrible start, and you kind of knew he was hurt. He goes on the disabled list with a strained shoulder. I would assume Jim Johnson becomes a closer. Keep an eye out on Cam Acolio, who throws really hard. Jim Johnson, more of a ground ball type, and kind of struggled last year in the role. Gave up some home runs. I think Cam Acolio profiles as a closer type. And the Angels, Angels will be Rodney. I think Kevin Jepson, maybe, you know, if Rodney has some issues, could be their guy. Half the Rangers were scratched from Wednesday's game due to food poisoning. C.J. Wilson, maybe he'll start on Friday. And the Mets announced John Main will remain in the rotation despite an ERA of 13.50. And I was watching the end of that Mets game on Wednesday, and certainly a winnable game. I mean, they scored some runs. David Wright hit another home run. First time he hit homers on back-to-back games since 2008. They didn't hit enough last year to do it. But they get a run in the ninth inning because Chris Ionette throws the ball into center field on a steal attempt. And then Henry Mejia, the, 19-year-old, 20-year-old now, gives up a home run on the first batter to Chris Ionette, and the game is over. Mets 2-6. You don't want to fall too far behind a good team in your division this early. You know, I mean, when you've got AL East teams that are going to be good. And you've got, you know, definitely one in the National League East that's going to be good, and the Cardinals are obviously good. You know, if you want to contend, you really can't have that 10-win April if you want to stick with it. Other stuff that happened on Wednesday on the field. Let's see here if there's anything interesting. Not a good outing for Dontrelle Willis. He did pitch in that game, didn't he? Yeah, Kyle Davies won the game. That was one of the early games of the day. Joel Piñeiro wins at Yankee Stadium. I looked up Pinero's numbers against the Yankees, even in those awful years for Seattle, where he was getting pounded by everybody. He wasn't getting pounded by the Yankees. You know, I think it was reasonable to expect Piñeiro was going to pitch well there. Twins first loss at home, and rain fell. Now, how do you feel about rain? You know, I saw that some Twins fans were happy that it was raining. They're like, oh, this is what it's like to be outside. Rain is a part of baseball. And other people were like, where's our dome? I would actually err on the side of not having the dome. I would not want to have a dome. Yes, some games will be rained, snowed, colded out. But, you know, rain happens, and, you know, it's part of baseball. You know, how many times have you seen players play through it? Anyway, Dustin Pedroia, 4 home runs already. This guy is definitely hitting 20 home runs. Last year didn't hit his 4th home run until almost the All-Star break. John Lackey. First win for the new club and the Orioles. I know the Astros are viewed right now as like the big joke in baseball. They're 0-8. The Orioles are worse. I'm telling you, the Orioles have a lesser team than Houston does. And by the end of April, I think we'll see that in the standings. I mean, the Orioles schedule, I just was pointing out in Buster Olney's column, and Tim talked about it as well, Tim Kirkchin. I mean, Baltimore's schedule in April is brutal. If they win 4, 5, 6 games this month, that might be the best they can do. It really might. B.J. Upton with a pair of home runs in that game. Carlos Quentin knocked in 6 for the White Sox. Blue Jays get pounded. And that'll happen from time to time, too. And my boy Jake Fox with his first home run for Oakland. Just play the guy. If you want a 25-home run bat to hit cleanup or fifth in your order because you can't score any runs, Oakland, play Jake Fox. And he did hit a home run in the National League. Big win by the Cubs. You know, it's early, and you say, wins, or how important are they? Cubs get 4 in the bottom of the 8th. Not something you see every day. LaTroy Hawkins gets lit up. Giovanni Soto hits one onto Waveland Avenue. And Carlos Marmol, with his second save in which he struck out the side in the 9th inning, nobody else in base, no other closer has done that this season. No other closer, that's according, I saw it in a note somewhere, no other closer has struck out the side for a save, for a full one-inning save. Marmol has done it twice already. Anything else here that struck my fancy? Not really. Diamondbacks Dodgers game. Rob Nyer tweeted about that all night long. Diamondbacks win 9-7 in extra innings. And Matt Kemp, not sure why he won a Gold Glove, but he did. I guess that's about it for the news of the day. Let's move it along now to Call to the Pen.
Call to the Pen. You've got email.
By the way, this note here. The Houston Astros started out in 1983, 0-9, and they still won 85 games. They went 85 and 77. So from that 0-9 start, they went 85 and 68. All right? I don't think Houston's going to contend. But bad teams at times good teams or average teams get off to bad starts. I'm just saying, if the Astros had an eight-game losing streak in July, nobody would have noticed. They just happened to have had it in the first 2 weeks of April. It happens. It has happened before. There are other teams that have had starts like this and then either gone on to contend or do even better. And yes, the Marmol line is true. No other major league pitcher has had such a save this season, striking out every batter while pitching at least one inning. Marmol can be great. Send your emails to baseballtoday@espnradio.com. Wow, we were just talking about this. Charlie Atkinson in Wenatchee, Washington. Great show. I grew up watching Willie Mays, and I just don't see how Albert Pujols can rank above Willie. He was the complete player. He contributed not only with the bat, but he could beat you with his glove, his arm, his speed, and aggressive instinctual base running. Mays would on occasion score from second on an infield groundout. He was truly, in capital letters, amazing. I'll grant you Babe Ruth. He did change the game and add to that his impressive record as a pitcher. But after the Babe, Willie Mays set the standard for the five-tool player, and no one has surpassed that standard. Keep in mind that he played a big part of his career in a pitcher's era and at Candlestick Park, hardly a hitter's yard. I respect Albert and will agree he is the greatest player of his time, but he does not impact the game the same way Willie did and they did day in and day out. You know, Pujols affects games too. I mean, center field versus first base, you can have a much bigger impact in center field. It's a premium defensive position, but Albert Pujols is a Gold Glove fielder, and he does steal bases. Now, well, he didn't do it quite the way Willie Mays did. If I had to say right now, I mean, I would say Willie Mays is the better all-time player than Pujols. I want to see more years out of Pujols. If it's Willie Mays versus Ted Williams, I'm actually inclined to go with Willie Mays over Ted Williams because of the defensive and base running value. Nobody's ever going to beat the Babe. I'm telling you, as Tim said earlier, Willie Mays right now, I'd say is second, Ted Williams third. I want to put Pujols over Bonds, whether I should or not, at this early stage. I am. I'm putting Pujols over Bonds. And then, the rest of the list I'll get to another day. Allerson Byerly, friend of the show, Facebook friend, I believe. Houston Chronicle sports columnist Richard Justice wrote in his column on April 12th, quote, "Free agency is baseball's heroin. An organization convinces itself it can make up for mistakes in player development by spending. They'll do it just this once, and they swear they'll never do it again because they know it's wrong." End quote. He goes on, "Free agency only works if there's an infusion of youth from the farm system. When there isn't, you look up one day, and our nice little baseball team is a bunch of independent contractors." What are your thoughts on this? Writes Allison. I read that column by Richard. I used to work with him at the Washington Post. Very good guy, very good writer. And I agree with everything he says. And we talked a lot about on this show with how teams spend money and how they can make up for mistakes, Yankees, Red Sox, Phillies, teams like that. I assume he's talking about the Houston Astros. Well, he is. He's talking about the Houston Astros here. And this is part of the problem. You know, if you look at some of the best teams in baseball, I mean, the Yankees have had Posada and Jeter and Rivera forever. They were homegrown players. You look at the Phillies infield, Howard, Utley, Rollins, they're all homegrown players. You know, you got to have something from your minor league system. And that's the thing that Houston has missed here. Now, again, they can still win half their games this season. It's just a bad start. They've got talent. But, I mean, Tommy Manziel is their shortstop, and it's basically like watching Adam Everett, okay? Defensive value, nothing offensively. The Pedro Feliz signing made no sense whatsoever. You've got a kid in Chris Johnson, who I do think can play, and then you go and you sign Feliz. A better defender, of course, but Chris Johnson, let's see what he can do. You may have to have an off year or two from your franchise to see what you have in the minor leagues. They just don't have a whole lot else. You know, Bud Norris is a key to their system. I think he was their number two prospect last year. You know, he's got to throw more strikes. But there's some strange moves they made. I mean, they almost had like a Kansas City Royals offseason where they spent money on free agent players that they didn't need to spend money on. Brandon Lyon, 3 years, $15 million. Nice pitcher, a good setup man. Maybe he can close for you, but it's a lot of money for a guy like that when you needed other things. You needed some offensive depth. You needed some starting pitching depth. If I were the Astros, I would just throw out guys like Felipe Paulino and young pitchers and Chris Johnson at third base every day. I wouldn't play Kaz Matsui. They have a kid who can play second. His name escapes me. I would probably look into trading Carlos Lee and Lance Berkman. I mean, you're not going to contend for another couple of years, and Carlos Lee has lost all his defensive value if he had any, and it's time to move on. But you've got to have a farm system that can make up for some of your mistakes. I like what Richard Justice wrote. One more email here, and I know we're getting close on time. Michael Reifenberg, Norman, Oklahoma. I was watching Sunday Night Baseball, and the guys in the booth started talking about defenses shifting heavily to a side of the field for certain hitters. Or Hershiser seemed to be against implementing radical shifts against certain hitters. He said that as a pitcher, defensive shifts limited the pitches he could make. In other words, if the defense shifted hard to the right side of the diamond for a left-handed pull hitter, then the pitcher loses the option of pitching the batter away, which could lead to an opposite field hit. What are your thoughts? Do you think today's pitchers feel like defensive shifts limit their pitch selection and location, or do they see it as an effective strategy? I've seen quite a bit of this, obviously, watching pretty much every Ryan Howard game, and this is what defenses do to him. I mean, you see the shortstop, like, moving closer to second base. The third baseman moves on to the other side of second base, and he hits a lot of balls into, like, the first base, second base hole that become outs. He basically has to hit it either really hard or hit it over the infield. And the second baseman is playing almost in right field. Other guys, Jim Thome, they do that for. You never see it with right-handed batters. I guess you can't. I mean, you need the first baseman to stay where he is and the second baseman for cutoffs and all. But personally, I think it's effective if the hitter never deviates from his normal strategy. You never see Ryan Howard laying down a bunt down the third base line or really trying to poke the ball the other way. I have seen it go against, in the World Series last year on the Johnny Damon stolen base. He steals second. There was nobody to cover for third because didn't they have Mark Teixeira? Mark Teixeira was up at the plate, I think. And they had everybody kind of, you know, moved over to the right side there. So that actually was bad for that. I think that was the share. I could be wrong about that. But you do see it. I don't think it's a big deal if it prevents base hits. You know, these grounders from Ryan Howard that would just go through, and I'm sure there's other lefty hitters that I'm forgetting at this time. Then I think it's worth it. I know Jim told me they do that, but he's so slow that you can afford to do that. Ryan Howard's not all that slow. I don't think that pitch, you know, I'm not going to go against Earl Hershiser. I mean, he was a terrific pitcher. I don't think pitchers mind it. And I think that, you know, a pitcher like Hershiser, you can still throw an outside pitch to a Ryan Howard or Jim Thome, and all they're going to do, like, they hit their home runs to the opposite field, too. They don't hit a lot of ground balls. And there's stats on this that show that, you know, if Ryan Howard never hits a ground ball to shortstop, then pitch him outside. He's either going to hit a fly ball to left or he'll hit it over the fence, but he's not going to hit one 800 feet like he did in that Astros game against Brandon Lyon last week. All right, enough of your emails. We'll get the three a day. Email address, baseballtoday@espnradio.com. Let's see, what's that last thing called? It's the View from Third.
Almost home.
Taking a look at tonight's matchups.
This is the View from Third.
All right, 12 games on the slate for this fine Thursday. I'll be at one of them in the sunshine in South Philadelphia. And I can't wait. Ring ceremony. And you know what? Say what you want about me, but look, I love this stuff. Okay, a lot of day games today. Rangers, Indians, Harrison and Huff. That's big. But hey, Matt Harrison does have good stuff, and I think it's important for Texas to get off to a good start because they have a lot of young pitching and it needs confidence. Red Sox Twins in the final game of their series, Tim Wakefield and Francisco Liriano. Talk about different approaches to throwing the ball. Liriano's first start, not great, but fastball pitcher, good slider, and I'm going to be interested to see how Liriano does. We know what Wakefield will do. Final game of the Yankees-Angels series. You do not want Scott Kazmir active on your fantasy team. Career ERA against the Yankees of 5.45. And I thought it was interesting. Last year at the time, weren't they saying, well, Scott Kazmir's done well against the Yankees. That's why the Angels wanted to acquire him. He didn't do well. I mean, he did better in the last couple of years, but I wouldn't have Phil Hughes active either. Phil Hughes' first start against Scott Kazmir in his first start of the season, and I suspect it'll be an 8-6 game. Something like that. Later on in the evening, Ben Sheets on the mound. 4.09 ERA. Wow, he's doing fine. 1.91 whip. He's not doing fine. He has four strikeouts in two starts combined. You don't want Carlos Silva out there. Ben Sheets, he can get better. Maybe he's building up arm strength, but, he's not Oakland's ace. Oakland's ace is Brett Anderson, people. Astros Cardinals, come on. Give the kids a win. They're 0-8. Let them play. Bud Norris and his 10.13 ERA, and he was awful in his last outing. Brewers Cubs, Jeff Suppan comes off the DL to face Carlos Zambrano. Zambrano with 11.88 ERA, but his first outing, it's going to take a while for that ERA to go down. His second outing, 9 Ks over 7 with 3 earned runs. He pitched well. Jay Happ at the stadium in Philly against Scott Olsen coming up from the minors. Man, they just have no pitching, Washington. And I say it almost every day, but, Washington scores 7 runs in a game. You need to win that game. You don't need to give up 14. Mike Pelfrey on the mound for the Mets. Look, you can say all you want about John Means doesn't deserve to be a starter, or Oliver Perez needs to go, or Mike Pelfrey. Who are you going to put in to start? Who else do the Mets have? And Nelson Figueroa wouldn't have been the answer. But they don't have anybody else that can start. So if you take John Means out of the rotation, or if Pelfrey gets pounded in Coors Field today, I don't know where else you turn. Tim Hudson on the mound at San Diego, that could be a shutout, or well, he's not going to go 9, but it could be 8 innings of 1. Josh Johnson not off to a very good start. He pitches against Aaron Harang. Be nice to see Johnson kind of get things rolling here, because he was supposed to be a guy who could contend for a Cy Young, and maybe he still will. I mean, it's only 2 outings. Josh Johnson, 0-1 in 2 starts, 6.30 ERA. Dan Heron at L.A. against Hiroki Kuroda. I would think that's going to be a better pitch game. Though Heron did get pounded in his last outing. Alright, let's see. Anything else here that we need to discuss? Obviously, the 63rd anniversary of Jackie Robinson Major League Baseball debut. 6-time All-Star, Rookie of the Year, won the 1949 National League MVP, 6 World Series, Baseball Hall of Famer in 1962, he batted .311. He's not noteworthy he's noteworthy for a lot of reasons, but he was a great player, as our guest Tim Kirkson said. All right, we'll probably have a guest on Thursday. I don't want to say it yet because I might jinx it, but I think we'll have one. And then Friday, of course, we'll look ahead to the weekend. Wait a second, today is Thursday. So Friday, my schedule's all messed up because I'm usually in Bristol today, but I'm not. Anyway, Friday we will have a guest, I believe, right? Okay,
yes.
We're trying. We're efforting a guest for Friday's show, as we will preview the weekend as we did last week. Thanks to Tim Kirkchin. Great job. As always, check out his stuff, ESPN.com's baseball page. He's the lead right now, Baseball Tonight, about the Rangers. But he writes so much other good stuff as well. Thanks to Jay Soderberg for pushing all the buttons and staying behind the glass. I'm Eric Carabel. That's a wrap for Thursday. We'll see you on Friday.
Thanks for listening to Baseball Today. For more baseball talk, be sure to check out Baseball Tonight, Monday through Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com.
Yeah, that's what we've been looking for.